Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. The Healing Muse, the annual literary and visual arts journal from Upstate Center for Bioethics and Humanities, is having an important birthday. That's right, it's the 10th anniversary of its publication. And in honor of this auspicious occasion, we've invited Dr. Deirdre Nealon, Associate Professor of Bioethics and Humanities, and its editor, to join us this morning and tell us more about this 10th anniversary issue and some of the festivities that are planned for the birthday celebration. Good morning. Welcome, Dr. Nealon.
Thanks so much, Linda, for having me.
Well, it's a wonderful accomplishment. 10 years of literary and artistic contributions to our community. We're very lucky to have you.
That sounds so wonderful. 10 years of artistic and literary contributions. You know, when we started this 10 years ago, Bonnie St. Andrews, who was an associate professor, or actually a full professor at the Center for Bioethics and Humanities, I don't think she had any idea how wonderfully it would go.
And well-received.
And well-received. You know, we started very small, and the idea was just to have almost an in-house journal. And Bonnie at the time was teaching a lot with the College of Nursing, and she wanted those nurses to write down their experiences. But within the first year, we realized that there was tremendous interest within Upstate's community. All the different people involved in healthcare had stories to tell.
And so is that basically what you're attempting to do? I mean, what's the mission, or what's kind of the overarching kind of organizing principle?
That's a great question. I think our mission is to tell stories so that patients become people again. Illness has a way of transforming people into something they don't recognize anymore. And what the Healing Muse wants to do is to remind them and the people who love them and the people who take care of them that we're all engaged in a mission of re-finding ourselves. We're going to come back from whatever, you know, diagnosis we've had. Somehow we remake ourselves. And I think the Muse is a place where you can hear those stories. People are remaking themselves on a daily basis.
And you have people contributing, both patients as well as physicians?
Yes, medical students, nursing students, people who take care of people, husbands who write about their wives, wives who write about husbands, significant others, everybody. I mean, the stories are, I think, timeless and universal.
Yeah, and profound. So what can we look forward to in this issue? Any particular highlights?
Well, once again, I'm very excited. I mean, every year I think, wow, can it get better? And I think, yes, it is. It is better. You'll find we have people from 23 states and the District of Columbia that are in this particular issue.
So, now, how does that come about that you have people writing from out of the central New York area?
The wonderful thing is the web, I think, is people look on the web for places that they can send their work. There are people writing in attics, even as you and I are sitting here right now. Everybody is writing on pieces of paper, and they look for places that they can send their stories. We also take out ads in the literary journals, and we advertise. And so people who have an interest in health or healing or telling a story about health find us. And so since the web, I mean, it just explodes how many people we get. This year is the first year, actually, we're not publishing anybody from Europe or Asia. We've had that, too, in the past.
I can't believe that global reach.
I know. It's
amazing. And that also includes visual arts as well.
Yes, we're very excited about the visual component of our magazine. We have a great design editor, Nancy Sharir, who's here at Upstate. And Rebecca Garden has done a wonderful job also of looking outside the university for artists. And there are many people who tell the story of their illness through the camera or through the paintbrush or through a sculpture. And they, too, find our place and send us, you know, reproductions of what they've made. And some of them find their way in here, too.
Well, that's an incredible vehicle for all that expressive art. And I think that's wonderful. But let's take a look at some of the contributors in this issue.
Okay. I thought maybe we'd like to start with a fellow that I've never met. His name is Howard Stein. And he teaches out in Oklahoma at a health science university. He's a cultural, medical, and psychoanalytic anthropologist. That's quite a mouthful
that's
to
right.
say there.
Quite a mouthful. That's exactly what I was thinking.
He's a person who's clearly interested in the people part of medicine. And he wrote this poem called Appointment at the Doctor's. And I think if we read this poem, you'll get a very clear sense about some of our mission.
Go right ahead.
So here it is, Appointment at the Doctor's. She tries to hold her life together with baling wire and duct tape. Sometimes it stays, other times it unravels and breaks apart. She and her mother, a grocery store cashier and a housekeeper, are the sole providers. They can't afford a car and get around town by asking relatives for rides and taking the city bus. It is a blustery winter day. Her youngest of three kids is sick with high fever, cough, aches, kept her up all night. She called the doctor's office in early morning and was worked in their schedule today. Her mom stayed home and watched the two other kids. She bundled up her little son and walked to the first bus stop. They waited. The bus was late, like it was sometimes early. You could never count on the schedule. Then there was the transfer and waiting for the second bus. At last, they walked from the bus stop to the doctor's office, more than an hour late for their appointment. The receptionist scolded her for being late. So did the nurse after her. They called her difficult, unreliable, inconsiderate. Didn't she understand what a schedule is for? Someone in the back of the clinic, a doctor, a nurse, overheard the clamor and said, "Let them stay. We'll work them in. You never know what some people have to go through to get here."
Wow. That's chilling.
Isn't it? Now, we spend a lot of time in medical education with the med students, and we try and talk to them about the psychosocial issues. We talk about what the story of the patient who's coming to see you, what happened before they got to you. And I love this poem because a whole lecture on how you have to be aware that some people can't just jump in their brand new car and drive their child to your office just like that. Some people don't live like that.
Yeah, I think that kind of sensitivity, that kind of awareness is crucial in people who are dealing and healing people from all walks of life.
You're right. And what I like about what Howard does in his poem is there's no bad guy in the poem because you get the sense that the clinic also is overworked. I mean, you know what it's like in a doctor's office. I mean, it's
absolutely
very, very busy, right? So when this person comes in late, the initial thing, who knows what's gone on before she got there, somebody's yelling at her, which is totally not right and unprofessional. But what Howard does is build in that there's somebody in the back of the office who yells out, "It's fine, you know, we understand." So I like this poem, and this is what we do, I think, in the Healing Muses. We're trying to show, by example, a life. And this is a life in 25 lines.
Yeah, that's exactly what art can do, though. I mean, whether it's visual arts, where they say a picture's worth 1,000 words,
yes.
Or in this case, a poem is worth
exactly
a whole narrative or a whole story, or more so even a whole lecture.
Yes.
And lectures don't go very far. This is so much more moving and telling, I think.
That's what I think, too. And, you know, you're reminding me, we have somebody in this issue who's a photographer who, when she got sick, started to take pictures of waiting rooms because she was waiting so long in them. And then she wrote a brief essay, which we've published, so that people who buy the issue will see. It's a great encapsulation of your surroundings, the environment of where we go to get healed. Sometimes the environment is completely antithetical to what we hope is going to happen for the person.
It's interesting because you mentioned before this issue of depersonalization, excuse me, that takes place for so many people once they become a patient.
Yes.
And many people who are in the role of caring for patients really, if they've never been a patient, don't have the insight into what that feels like. I mean, the idea of putting on a gown with your bum hanging out and,
yes. You
know, none of your personal effects with you or near you. Sometimes you're alone. I mean, all of those issues really play such a huge role in the healing process or in the sense of hope
yes. That
a patient feels. And this, in its own way, begins to characterize or capture it and maybe really reach out not only to patients, but more so to providers and to healthcare professionals.
Yes,
who are
I think that's what we would hope. You know, my goal has always been, can I get this journal in every physician's waiting room? because I think that the patients would love to read this rather than the old Field and Stream magazine that's been sitting there for, you know, several months. They could actually read this and have a conversation with the provider that about these particular issues. And some of our very powerful essays come from physicians and nurses who become ill. And all of a sudden, from the other side of the bed or the other side, I know you know that one
you
well.
Referenced that, and that's in effect was part of my own history, where my husband, who is a physician, had an injury and became a patient for the first time in his life. And I think it was a transformative experience in his case, feeling that sense of helplessness, feeling that sense of depersonalization. I mean, clearly, he was a known person, so he didn't experience it to the degree that most people do.
But the fact that he wrote about it, and he wrote about it so poignantly for us, and I didn't know Linda until today, but when I'm meeting him for the first time, but Paul's essay, I think, made a big difference for people to read that, because he really captured, my goodness, you become different when you walk into this space.
That's very kind of you to say. Yeah. And I know for him it was, as I said, very transformative. And I think cathartic,
yeah,
as well,
yeah,
to be able to share those concepts. So what do you have coming up on tap for this celebration, or what have you already done?
We'll be having the launch of the Muse, which by the time this airs, we will have had a great celebration where some of our local writers will come and read, and the book will be distributed for the first time.
I understand you already had Kay Ryan, who is the immediate U.S. Poet Laureate from 2008 to 2010, and she did a poetry reading
yes,
here.
Yes, that's an amazing accomplishment that we did to celebrate not only the Muse, but the Center for Bioethics and Humanities is also in its 10th year.
Yeah.
I have to say that the Muse couldn't exist without the Center. The Center has made a really good home for the Muse to flourish.
Yeah. So any plans for the future? Any thoughts about where you're headed? Any changes?
The goal is always to reach more people and to provide a space for more writers. So the immediate goal is more publicity for us, more sales, and another great issue next year.
Yeah, that sounds great. We have just a couple minutes. Let's read a poem from Kay Ryan. That's
good.
In this
I'd love
issue.
To. Okay, this is one that she wrote in a book called Say Uncle. It's called Why We Must Struggle. And she was very kind to let us publish it in our journal. If we have not struggled as hard as we can at our strongest, how will we sense the shape of our losses, or know what sustains us longer, or name what change costs us? Saying how strange it is that one sector of the self can step in for another in trouble, how loss activates a latent double, how we can feed as upon nectar, upon need.
Well, that really speaks to the resilience of the human spirit,
doesn't it?
It,
though? Yeah, it's beautiful. I think that that's a really nice poem to guide people in a troubled time.
Well, Dr. Deidre Neal, an associate professor of bioethics and humanities and editor of The Healing Muse, thanks so much for joining us today.
Linda, thanks for having me.
Well, we have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. Please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR.